This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Tiara Vian. Here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. This is the podcast that's designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region, and thanks so much for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of November 3rd, 2025. In politics news, math teachers at Cienega High School in southern Arizona are facing death threats and calls that they be fired after a Turning Point USA employee falsely accused them of wearing Halloween costumes celebrating the assassination of their organization's co-founder, Charlie Kirk. From the politics desk, Cameron Sanchez reports.
Over the weekend, prominent local and national Republicans amplified a group photo of the teachers in their costumes, white t-shirts splashed with fake blood and the words "problem solved" printed on the chest. According to Vail School District Superintendent John Carruth, claims that the costumes mocked Kirk's death were untrue and led to harassment and death threats against the teachers. The shirts, Carruth explained, were a joke about solving math problems, worn both this year and last as math-themed Halloween costumes. Still, Carruth issued an apology and said the shirts won't be worn again, while some Arizona Republicans have yet to retract their calls for those teachers to be shamed and fired. Cameron Sanchez, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In the news, as the U.S. government shutdown ended its first month Saturday and SNAP food benefits are mired in uncertainty, folks across the country have reached out to step up and help. Michelle Marisco reports on local efforts in Flagstaff this weekend.
Early Saturday morning, a trio of partners of a popular series of Flagstaff restaurants rolled out a mobile food truck behind their breakfast spot, Fat Bagels.
We have 250 bagel sandwiches in here, as well as 200 bean and cheese burritos. And over here, we have a whole another batch of burritos we got here. We just rolled
it was still dark out when John Conley and his business partners arrived to open the truck up for the first day of their new mission.
It was going to be SNAP recipients. And then we just realized that, you know, the government shut down. Everybody's hurting. We're right in front of the Flagstaff Family Food Center. We see what they go through every day. We're just going to feed everybody. So,
a federal judge ruled Friday the United States must continue paying for food stamp benefits with emergency funds. But without a clear plan forward, a delay is expected, meaning people will go hungry.
It started with SNAP, but right now, until the SNAP gets funded, we're just going to feed anybody that needs food.
Business partner Ashley Lindemuth.
You know, some of us are more fortunate than others. And it's our duty to show our kindness and our thankfulness to the Flagstaff community and to all of our people that show us love, and so we need to return it.
From 7 to 10 every morning, the food truck will be making hot meals available to anyone who wants one.
Hot beans. More hot beans. More hot beans for our backups when we're ready to roll some margaritas.
Outside of Flagstaff in the outlying community of Doney Park, store owner Rebecca Rambo is getting Mountain View Market ready for a food drive supported by her customers.
Hi, honey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What do you need most?
Anything non-perishable. Dry goods, canned goods.
Rambo pauses to take inventory of what the food drive is offering.
Let's see, we have easy items, items that don't expire quickly. So we have some hamburger helper, we have macaroni and cheese, some protein, some chicken breast, we have refried beans.
Rambo's food drive started as a shoe drive organized by her daughter's school. As the deadline for SNAP benefits neared last week, she switched the drive over to food. She wants to make it as easy as possible for people to take food if they need it.
It's hard to ask. And when people have to ask, not only is that a humbling experience for them, but it is for us too. And so our answer is, of course.
Her own customers have been buying products from the market and leaving them for others to take. Rambo pauses to say goodbye to a longtime customer making a plan to donate food.
Thank you so much.
Ooh,
I'll see you next week.
Okay.
Thanks for everything.
Yes.
Yes, and I'll be back tomorrow with some stuff.
You got it.
All righty.
It'll be a whole new setup tomorrow, by the way.
Okay.
So, you'll see what to do, though.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty.
Love you. Bye.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
She turns back to take stock of what's needed in the coming days.
Everyone steps up. I have an amazing staff, but the community never lets us skip a beat. if there's a need, we can meet it, but everybody helps. So it's not just the store, it's not just me. We happen to be in this unique microcosm of a spot that we can do things.
Like the folks at Fat Bagels, Rambo's mission is a simple but profound one.
If there's a need and you feel like you need it from the table, you're gonna be able to take it. And no questions asked. And that's just how it's going to be till things settle out a little bit.
Michelle Marisco, KJZZ News, Flagstaff.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. KJZZ's team of dedicated journalists bring you accurate and unbiased reporting. This commitment to thorough local journalism is what sets KJZZ apart, but the reality is quality reporting costs a lot of money. Your financial contribution helps fill the gap in funding. Please begin a monthly sustaining donation today at kjzz.org, and thank you. In business news, relations between Canada and the U.S. are at a low point following the collapse of recent trade talks and some belittling remarks from President Trump. Here in Arizona, that long-term relationship is not only personal, it's also business. As Phil Latzman found out, the discordant tone between two friends, neighbors, and associates has struck a nerve.
Every year, roughly 1 million Canadians flock to Arizona. Approximately 100,000 of them are here for the winter, and according to census figures, another 40,000 are expats who now live here full-time. To find some of those permanent residents, of course, I headed to my local curling rink.
How many places like this are there in Arizona?
This is it.
That's Lindsay Estabrooks with the Arizona Coyotes Curling Club in Tempe, the only one like it in the state. Estabrooks, who has dual citizenship, has lived here for more than 40 years and established the club back in 2003 with some fellow Canadian expats who love to curl. Some of his seasonal curlers, though, won't be back this winter.
I know some that say, yeah, you know, we're staying away, right? And others say, you know, I don't feel like this is affecting me directly, so I'm not going to let the situation ruin my enjoyment.
Estabrooks says feelings have been hurt.
Canada and the United States have been almost like family back and forth.
So to be referred to as the 51st state, I mean, is that just shocking to hear from a president?
Well, yeah.
Fellow co-founders of the Coyotes Curling Club, Carl and Caroline Nasso, are also longtime Arizona residents with roots up north.
You know, a lot of people have hurt feelings. They've always had a strong connection to the U.S., looked at the U.S. as a not only an ally, but almost like a family member or a cousin, and all of a sudden they've been shunned, you know. They quite don't know how to react, I think.
His wife, Caroline, has a slightly different view of the consternation.
I'm not bothered by it. Canada is the U.S.'s best neighbor. Canada's a good friend to the U.S. He'll figure that out.
Good friends don't like being insulted, though.
Well, I just take him with a grain of salt. And next year, he'll be on to something different.
As for the 100,000 seasonal snowbirds, according to the Canada-Arizona Business Council, they add $1.4 billion annually to the state's economy.
So we've briefed most of the tourism industry. We see a 20% reduction.
That's the council's CEO and founder, Glenn Williamson, who is also former chairman of EPCOR Water USA, the largest private water utility in Arizona and one of more than 500 major Canadian companies in the state.
What is the general sentiment among the Canadians that you're dealing with about the way this country has changed, if at all, you know, in the past year?
They hate America. Bottom line, there is absolutely no love affair with Canada whatsoever. Canada was going through its own turmoil, and there's nothing better to pull together turmoil than a common enemy. And when this administration made the statement of the 51st state, boy, oh boy, did that ever get the ire of the average Canadian.
Williamson, though, believes the negative economic impact has been exaggerated.
You know, we see a drop like that. It's not going to wipe you out. The talk is substantially worse than the reality. And I hate to say it because I'm sitting here talking to the media, but unfortunately, some of the media has taken advantage.
But whether the impact is overstated or not, local tourism officials are doing damage control. Rachel Sacco is the longtime CEO of Experience Scottsdale.
People have a choice when they travel and where they travel. And people are wanting to travel to places that resonate with them emotionally. And you have to be mindful of the respect.
Sacco says that long-earned trust between neighbors and friends has been broken, and the wounds may need time to heal.
We miss our Canadians. Not only are they part of our snowbird season, if you will, they're part of our visitation year over year. They flock to our resorts, our golf courses, but they also own homes and businesses here.
Not to mention that Canada is Arizona's second largest trading partner behind Mexico. Meanwhile, back at the curling rink, Lindsay Esterbrook says there's a simple solution.
You want to get along with your neighbor, you don't say bad things about them for no reason.
In Tempe, Phil Latzman, KJZZ News.
In Fronteras News. After President Trump shut the door to asylum seekers on his first day in office, many who once hoped to cross into the United States are now looking to Mexico for protection. But they're running into a system that's already overburdened, and which experts say is now even more so after Trump's cuts to foreign aid. The Fronteras Desk's Nina Kravinsky reports from the Mexico-Arizona border in part two of our series, Chasing Asylum.
Diego never wanted to leave Ecuador. He misses everything about it.
Todo. La comida, el clima.
The food, the weather, the parks, life with his dog, he says. The 61-year-old civil engineer was comfortable. Until 2024, when he started getting texts, threatening ones, from an unknown number.
Entonces, yo pensé al principio que era una broma.
I thought it was a joke at first, he says, from a migrant shelter thousands of miles away in Nogales, Sonora. But then, he says, armed assailants showed up at his home and attacked him, demanding $15,000 in exchange for his life. We're only using his first name because of fears for his safety. So Diego fled his country, sending his 5-year-old lab mix Blackie along first by plane. Now, the dog is in Arizona with Diego's sister, but Diego is stuck. He arrived in Nogales, Sonora just before January 20th, when the Trump administration shut the door to asylum seekers like him. I'm trapped here, Diego says, which is why he's now trying to seek asylum in Mexico rather than the U.S., at least for now. He's one of thousands of asylum seekers whose options are dwindling in the months since Trump took office. Many people who had traveled or were traveling to the Mexico-U.S. border before January 20th turned back. But Diego is one of the many others who have deemed that option too dangerous and are now turning to Mexico's asylum system for help. That isn't easy. Rachel Schmidtke is with the advocacy group Refugees International.
I think the challenge right now that most people are running up against is that the wait times are extremely long.
That leaves people like Diego without legal protection as the months stretch on without a decision about whether or not Mexico will give them refugee status, a process that by Mexican law is generally meant to last around 45 business days. Experts say that Mexico's asylum system was already overburdened before the U.S. halted asylum appointments at the border. Andres Ramirez is the former head of COMAR, the Mexican government agency that handles refugee claims.
We were always struggling for us to get more budget. To no avail.
He was the head of that agency when asylum claims in Mexico skyrocketed around 2023. While asylum claims in Mexico aren't expected to reach those highs this year, numbers will likely mirror last year, despite the far lower number of migrants entering Mexico. But the asylum system is now working with an even smaller budget after the Trump administration's foreign aid cuts. Those cuts included slashing funding for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, a UN agency that provided a large chunk of COMAR's funding, half by some estimates. In an email to KJZZ, a UNHCR Mexico spokesperson said it had to cut its funds to COMAR by 30% in the second half of this year. Experts say that's having an impact.
That means that we also have a debilitated, you know, government agency that's in charge of adjudicating asylum claims in Mexico.
Gretchen Kuhner is the director of the Institute for Women in Migration, a nonprofit that advocates for asylum seekers in Mexico. COMAR did not respond to a request for comment. For people like Diego, who are waiting for their cases to process, that backlog means months of being in limbo.
Entonces pasan los meses y...
Months and months pass, and we get depressed, he says. Without documents, he can't find a job as a civil engineer. Schmidtke, with Refugees International, says not having legal status leaves migrants in Mexico open to abuse.
Criminal networks in Mexico, particularly ones that prey on migrants, like, are very good, sadly, at what they do. So there's just a whole host of things that could happen to people who are haven't had their asylum claims approved.
Diego spends his days at the shelter in Nogales as he waits for his claim to process. But even as he waits for papers in Mexico, he's holding out hope he can one day make it to the United States. His teenage son lives in Kansas, and he misses his dog.
Impaciente, pero hay que esperar. No queda de otra.
I'm impatient, but I have to wait. There's nothing else I can do. Nina Kravinsky, KJZZ News, Nogales, Sonora.
Find the complete series and photos at kjzz.org/chasingasylum. And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. In Tribal Natural Resources, supported in part by a grant from the Katina Foundation. Last week, President Trump instructed the Defense Department to immediately resume nuclear weapons testing. As Gabriel Pietrazio reports, that's sending shockwaves around the West.
Prior to a moratorium imposed by Congress in 1992, the U.S. conducted over 1,000 nuclear tests, mostly done at the Nevada test site, even hundreds of above-ground detonations.
We can't fully rule it out. That would be extremely provocative.
Daryl Kimball is executive director of the Nonpartisan Arms Control Association.
I don't think people need to fear mushroom clouds on the desert floor outside of Las Vegas, but the very notion of resuming nuclear testing, in my view, is a disrespectful slap in the face to those who in the past have suffered from radiation poisoning from nuclear testing fallouts in the Mountain West.
Like Leslie Begay, a former Navajo uranium miner. He's also a Vietnam vet and cancer survivor, having a double lung transplant with 123 stitches in all.
That was the hardest thing I ever encountered.
Compensation for radiation exposure victims was revived this summer. Gabriel Pietrazio, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In education news. The Arizona Department of Education has released a new round of letter grades for Arizona's public schools. Wayne Shutsky reports.
The department looks at several performance measurements to determine the grades, including student growth and proficiency in English, math, and science. Around 78% of the state's public elementary and high schools received an A or B grade, which indicates a school is exceeding expectations on state assessments or is showing significant student growth and high graduation rates. About 18% of public schools received a C, indicating they are meeting expectations. 44 schools received Ds, and 13 schools received an F. That is up from 5 failing schools the year prior. Wayne Shutsky, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And finally, from KJZZ's original production, The Show, musician Todd Snyder has had a drifting way of life, as he explains to co-host Sam Dingman.
So it's 2007, and I'm driving a yellow cab in New York City. It's not exactly what I thought I'd be doing with my adult life, but it's also kind of great. I feel like I have this real sense of purpose. I'm like a conduit. I help people get where they need to go. And best of all, I get to listen to the radio all day. Still, it's a tough job. And this one day, I'm careening around the city, knowing I haven't had enough fares to make rent. There's about an hour left in my shift, and I am realizing I'm going to come up short this month. My thoughts start racing. I feel like a failure. I realize I don't really have a clear plan to make my dream for myself come true, which is to be the person talking on the radio instead of listening to it. I love the feeling of adventure that I get from cab driving, but on days like this, it is hard to keep hold of. And then, right on cue, the radio starts playing this song that somehow makes it all make sense. It's one of those songs that feels like someone snuck into your brain, transcribed your inner monologue, and sang it back to you.
A little out of place, a little out of tune, so lost in space, racing that moon, climbing the walls of a hurricane, still over all, I can't complain. All I wanted was...
When you don't grow up religious, a song that finds you at the right time can become your faith. That is what happened to me the first time I heard Todd Snyder.
I got nothing to lose, nothing to gain. It's like a one-way ticket to cruise in the passing lane. I can't complain.
Hey, is that Todd?
Yeah.
Hey, Todd, nice to meet you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, man.
It's 2025, and it took a while, but I have somehow convinced a radio station to let me talk into the microphone. At this point, I have listened to Can't Complain and all of Todd's other songs literally hundreds of times. My favorite thing to do is listen to the recordings of his live shows, because he'll often tell the stories behind the songs. And in one of those recordings, he says he wrote Can't Complain after a gig right here in Phoenix.
Oh, that's right. You know, I had a bad show there.
It was the early 90s, and Todd was playing at this Western-themed bar. Back then, he says, tour managers sometimes mistook him for a country act, and they would book him at places with line dancing and cow skulls on the wall.
Which is always a bad sign for groups like ours.
Todd could tell this was not his scene. So he started drinking a few hours before his set, and by the time he got on stage, the crowd had spent the first half of the show booing his opener.
So I played like a song, and I had my guitar out of tune, and I knew it was out of tune, and I could tell the crowd was confused. And I just left it like that, and then after the song got over, I thanked them and said goodnight. I did one song.
The next day, in the car on the way to a show in Tucson, Todd's label called. They were furious.
And the big thing was that I had deliberately played out of tune. And so I made that song a little out of place, a little out of tune, yeah. Sort of lost in space, racing the moon. It came to me that like on the drive from Phoenix to Tucson.
That night, Todd played Can't Complain live on stage for the first time. And since then, he has opened almost every show with that song.
It meant so much to me the way it came to me, and that I trusted songs that came to me that same way after.
And just so I make sure I understand, you mean you trusted songs that came to you in the intuitive way that one mm-hmm. did on that drive to Tucson?
Yeah. When they come to me like Can't Complain came to me, it feels more like I'm doing a painting than say, making a chair.
I get the sense that something clicked for Todd when he started making up songs in this more intuitive way, because that's kind of how he lives his life.
There's this hallelujah, I'm a bum element to this that means more to me than the music part. I would rather be remembered for the way I lived than the songs I sang.
When Todd Snyder was 17, he left home and started doing what he calls the sofa circuit, crashing with whoever would take him. He spent most of his time getting high, reading Mark Twain and Hunter S. Thompson, and writing poetry. At some point, he was crashing with this guy named Trog.
We used to sit around at night and listen to whatever music Trog wanted to listen to.
In another one of those live show recordings, Todd tells the story of what happened next.
And one night he pulls out a cassette tape by a guy named Jerry Jeff Walker, and I had never heard of it. I'm singing about the drifting way of life. Yes, different from the many that I've known. I hadn't heard of him before, but I just loved it. I fell in love with it. I said, I want to see this guy. So he was playing at this club, and me and Trog, we went down there to watch Jerry Jeff, and he was standing up there just with his guitar, just like I thought, I could do that. So I got a guitar, and I practiced those. I used the same three chords he uses the whole night. I still do, you know.
Armed with some chords to pair with his poetry, Todd had everything he needed to live life like his heroes.
People who are like, well, what do? I just bang around and stuff happens. As soon as I got the guitar, I was just like the Muhammad Ali of drifters. Uh-huh. I could just make up songs about you. Pick me up in your car, I'll make up a song about you. Yeah. Or let me stay and I'll make up songs about you.
Even if Todd didn't set out to be remembered for his music, he turned out to be a really good songwriter. One night, Jimmy Buffett heard him play and offered him a record deal. So Todd did a few albums for Jimmy, but then he got drunk before a show one night and went on stage and cursed out all the label execs, so they fired him. Then he got picked up by John Prine's label, spent a few years touring with Prine. Eventually, Todd started his own label, fittingly called Aimless Records. Through it all, he sold just enough albums to keep touring. And that was fine with him. That's his favorite part, the banging around.
I used to like to get off the bus in the middle of the afternoon and go find some people that didn't know who I was and not tell them. And then just go on the wildest adventures. And then at about 7, go, man, you guys want to go see the folk show?
During our conversation, Todd says he thinks of himself like a lost sock in a dryer, just rolling and tumbling until the cycle is complete, which might be soon.
It feels like it's over. I mean, about 2 years ago, I stopped. And I'm never going to be that person again.
Well, can I ask you about what led you to stop? Because, I mean, just to say in full disclosure, I, you know, as a fan, I noticed that you had stopped touring. And
yeah, I have this like degenerative arthritis that has been eating at me for a long time. On my bones, it's like chronic pain through everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
Some days I can't do anything. So I'm worried that I wouldn't be able to play or that I would get locked up in front of everybody. And it's embarrassing. And it just gets worse, you know. And they say there's no cure for it.
Thank you for sharing all that, Todd. And I'm really sorry to hear that. And I guess I'm tempted to ask, for a while, I don't know if you're still doing this, but for a while you had this kind of mantra that you would give at the beginning of your shows where you would say,
I didn't come down here to change any of y'all's minds about anything. I come down here to ease my own mind about everything. It works every time. With that said, I want to thank y'all for giving me a chance to do this for you again.
Do you feel like if you weren't making up songs anymore, you'd still have a way to ease your mind?
No, I don't.
Todd says he's got a handful of songs left about the sock life. 9 of those songs appear on a record Todd released earlier this year, High, Lonesome, and Then Some.
There's like a last batch from Living Like a Conduit and Letting It Happen.
Todd has a tour planned for this new record. That was my excuse to talk to him for this piece. He was scheduled to play a show at the Van Buren tonight. But last night, I got an email from Ticketmaster saying that show has been postponed. The email says it'll be rescheduled, but based on my conversation with Todd, I'm not so sure. I do know that whatever happens, he'll still be Todd Snyder, and that overall, he can't complain.
I'm really, really lucky and really grateful. I can't believe the way it all turned out, but I set out to be a failure, and I still think I can pull it off.
Well, if we never get together again, forgive me for all these fools I've been. See if you can remember me when I was listening to my better angel. Just see if you can remember me when I was listening. Well, it's like a force of nature coming over me. Well, I can't keep myself.
And this has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by Helios Education Foundation and Alliance Bank, the Vitalist Health Foundation, the Intel Corporation and Beach Fleischman, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vian. This is KJZZ. Listen more, learn more online and on the KJZZ mobile app.